A podcast of the cinema,
starring me and only me.
And did you,
Dave White?
Did you?
I'm a film critic for the Wrap.
Did you put the chips
away?
I'm
the producer of this show.
Dave White. Are the chips?
And I also am in charge of putting away the chips.
You better.
I did not eat all the chips, nor will I be eating them on the microphone.
You best not.
Because I'm a professional podcaster, the boss of this show. You are my sidekick.
Oh, so I guess this is a comedy podcast now.
You're my sidekick and obedient spouse, Alonzo Duralde, reviews editor for The Wrap, co-host
of... Oh, what's that? I'm your boss at The Wrap? I guess you're right.
Co-host of the Breakfast All Day podcast, co-host of the Who Shot You podcast on the Maximum Fun Network.
And boss of this podcast.
I like to let you think that you are.
Uh-huh.
But recently, you have failed me. And I really think it's time.
Have I?
That thank, because you failed me, you have to understand that I am the boss of this podcast.
Uh-huh.
Here's how you failed
me. I'm the person with his finger on the thing that can make your mic stop making sounds.
Here's how you failed me.
You tread carefully. How have I failed you?
I was at the laundromat, minding my own business.
Mm-hmm.
Having dystopian fears about ICE agents descending on the little strip mall.
Yes.
And going in to the taqueria and the 7-Eleven trying to round people up. So I texted you and I said, hey, how do I say in Spanish, you don't have to answer their questions, and also how do I say in Spanish, demand a lawyer? And you, Spanish speaker, were like, I don't know if my Spanish is great enough to exactly get that across. And I was like, oh, really?
I have never claimed...
Professional Spanish speaker.
I am not a professional Spanish speaker.
Descendant of immigrants from Spain.
I have always maintained that I speak Spanish on a solidly fourth grade level. But you're asking me for these, like, imperative verbs and legal terminology, and I'm like, yeah. I don't want to tell you the wrong thing. I don't want to have you telling...
Demand a donut.
Exactly. I don't want to have you telling saying something stupid to the person who is trying to not get swept up by an ICE raid.
I just want to, I found another friend, a wonderful friend, who texted me back and said, here's how you do it.
Yeah, he's more of a native speaker than I am, and, like, you know, he's
Latino.
And he's
in
also...
And you are not. You are merely... Spanish.
He's also about bringing down the man, so of course he's going to have these phrases at his fingertips.
But I realize that even if I screw it up, if I get caught up in the fracas, even if I screw up the Spanish, I will come correct with all the English.
Well, yeah.
Because I am so...
While you're yelling, request a barrister!
My superpower in the world, I believe, and I believe you've told me the same, is pestering people with endless questions.
It's true. You're like that other vampire on What We Do in the Shadows.
The energy vampire?
Yes. You just will ask, and then if there's a follow-up, and then you need to know more, and what about this, and da-da-da, and people are just like...
So be it.
Oh, God, how can I just... I'll say anything if he'll just stop talking to me.
I'm really good at getting down to the bottom of the situation with the many, many, many questions. And that is how I will combat ICE.
You will melt ICE with the force of your interrogations.
With my endlessly annoying questions. I'm going to do it.
Great.
I mean, it hasn't... I haven't...
You've not been pressed into service just
we
yet.
We live on the West Side, but and you haven't ready. Exactly been targeting the West Side, so... Yeah. That's what's up. So, hey, guess what?
What?
We're a film review podcast.
We are. It's true.
That's hosted by film critics.
Yes.
That's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
We have films to review this week.
We do.
You saw Ophelia, I did not see Ophelia.
Yes.
I saw Child's Play, finally.
Mm-hmm.
You did not.
Yes.
We both saw Stuber.
Mm-hmm.
The Farewell.
Yes.
And Crawl.
Yes.
Now, how do we want to do this? Do you want to start with the best and go to the worst?
We could jump back and forth.
Let's start with the best.
Why do you even ask me these questions if you've already made up your mind?
Rhetorical questions.
I see.
I'm helping to lead you into the segue.
Just do the thing.
I would like to talk about The Farewell.
Okay, let's.
I would like to explain how great it is.
All right.
It's by Lulu Wang. This is not her first film, you told me.
Yeah,
I thought it was.
I was surprised to learn that she has a previous feature.
I did not know of that previous feature. I did not see that previous feature, but it's there. Can I see it? Do you know?
I don't know. Maybe it is her first pancake.
Oh, well, you know what? Better, I tell you something. If you're going to rely on an entire movie to be the first pancake, you got money and time to burn, I guess, because I don't think anyone that sets out to make the first pancake when they're making a film. Am I wrong about that?
I would think not, but I mean, isn't there a Tarantino feature that we're never going to see that he made before Reservoir Dogs?
Isn't that
part of his legend?
He has a legend?
Well, you know, such as it is.
Okay.
And you know, Richard Linklater, before Slacker, made that movie, you can't grow crops from reading a book or something.
I've never heard of any
so,
of these.
So, yeah, I think a lot of times filmmakers, they have a first pancakes.
Okay, well, this one apparently got released, though, right? I mean, like...
It has an IMDb page.
Sure, then it is. The Farewell, however, stars Awkwafina as a young woman in her late 20s, early 30s?
She's 31. It's stated in the film.
Lives in New York. And she and her family, her mother and father, she's the only child.
Sorry, before we get too far into this. the first film is called Posthumous.
Okay.
It can be rented on Amazon Prime.
Don't do that until after the 16th.
It stars Britt Marling and Jack Huston. Yes. Honor the strike.
Today is the 14th. Currently, Amazon employees are on strike. I don't know if all of them are, but some of them are.
Because for Prime Day, which is the 15th and 16th.
Prime Day is tomorrow, Monday, and Tuesday the 16th. And that's when the strike is happening. Don't be a scab. Don't break the strike.
Wait.
Don't shop on Amazon.
Are you a scab if you are... I thought a scab was somebody who went into work place of the... I know what you mean, though.
Don't be a scab helper.
Don't cross a picket line.
Yeah. Don't shop at Amazon until after the 16th.
Yes.
You probably got your Prime account and all that. I know. But let's all support the workers.
For once?
Yes. For once. She is an only child. She and her mother and father came to the United States when she was a little girl from China. All the rest of the family is still in China. They learned that their grandmother has cancer and has about 3 months left to live. They all fly over to China, not to comfort her in her final months, but to participate in a distraction wedding.
That is their cover.
That is a cover story for them to all come to China and say goodbye to grandmother. We learn while watching the film that China, it is a common practice with an elderly person if they are diagnosed with something fatal and don't have much time left. You don't tell them. You let them pass away without the worry that comes with knowing you don't have much time left. While I personally don't understand that as a thing and would never want anyone to do that to me,
mm-hmm.
The film makes a very I won't say a solid case for doing it, but a solid explanation for why people would do it.
Like, the Awkwafina character is aghast at this, and I think she's sort of meant to be the conduit for Western audiences who've maybe never heard of this practice before,
right.
You know. But over the course of the film, she may not be completely on board, but she sort of comes to see...
She accepts it.
Yeah.
After a time.
There's a reason for doing it that isn't, you know, evil.
one of the nice parts of the movie, when someone's trying to explain it to her, they say, you know, you grew up in the West.
Yeah.
You were born here, but you grew up in the United States. And in the West, there is the understanding that your life belongs to you. And in the East, there's the understanding that your life is part of a whole. You're part of a family. You're part of a community.
Right.
And so the family bears the burden of your death. Not you.
For you.
For you, yeah. Which made me think, well, I still don't want anyone doing that to me. However, I do get it.
Yeah.
The film itself is so lovely and so sweet and big-hearted.
Yes.
It is sort of deliberately paced. It is not a rollicking comedy. It's not a wrenching, heartbreaking drama. It incorporates elements of those things, but the comedy is character-based. It's based on small sort of human moments, and the sad stuff is, you know, all there on the table. And when it gets to it, it's not cheap. It's not forced. It's fully developed and fully earned. I really love this.
Yeah, it's I always feel weird citing My Big Fat Greek Wedding because I'm not comparing these movies in any way, except that there is an intense cultural specificity here that in turn makes this a very universal story.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be Chinese or Asian or, you know.
You don't have to understand anything going in. You can be dumb me and walk in.
This is a story about families and how families work and how people relate to each other or don't and how, you know, they look out for each other. And it's very low key in its poignancy, but it is still very poignant.
I don't want people to think that it's a movie about someone dying of cancer, because that's actually not the thrust
the crux
of the film.
Of it, yeah.
The woman who plays the grandmother, whose name I cannot pronounce properly. It's her first film.
I'll take
a tackle
at it. It's Shuzhen Zhao.
Okay.
She's extraordinary.
She's so cool. She's so like
present,
lively and in this character. I don't know where she came from. I don't know how they found her, but she's terrific.
Yeah.
And Awkwafina is the opposite of everything you've ever come to know about her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is a revelatory performance.
Her sort of like, big comic relief performance in Crazy Rich Asians.
And Ocean's 8.
Her, all those YouTube videos where she's rapping. Mm. It's all comedy rap, but like it's, you know, as I said on KCRW the other day, my introduction to her was a video where she and Margaret Cho are rapping about their vaginas. and it's really funny. But if you saw that video, you would not think, oh, dramatic actress. Like,
it's funny, though, isn't it? Apparently, the grandmother... Well, I'm not going to go into that, but I will say this, though. This is...
Don't give away whatever you were going
to
give away.
I'm not going to.
Yeah, yeah.
On one level, this is a wedding movie, even if it's a wedding that everyone is attending with other agendas at hand. You know,
I hadn't thought about it like that.
Her cousin, who lives in Japan, has been dating this girl for 3 months, and now they're getting married just to give everybody a reason to go to China to see the grandmother. But like Altman's A Wedding, which is a movie that I really love, it's that kind of thing where you feel like the movie, as great as Awkwafina is and as fascinating as her character is, you feel like the movie could branch off with any of the relatives and their story would be equally fascinating.
Right.
You know, you don't get a lot of them, but, you know, but you just, you get enough of them to realize, oh, you have your own stuff going on. Like, you know, Awkwafina's uncle, you know, who, you know, is her father's brother. And, you know, he also left the country. And then, like, you know, her mom and all these different characters, you just know that they've got, if you were to, if the camera were to suddenly just go in their direction, there would be something equally fascinating going on.
Right.
Speaking of, this movie was a hit at Sundance this year.
Yes.
Ophelia, I saw at Sundance 2018.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It knocked around for a bit. And I meant to review it a couple of weeks ago, and sadly I forgot about it. But it is now streaming, so you can rent it and watch it on iTunes and all the different places. I have not seen this movie in a year and a half, so forgive me if I'm a little fuzzy. But I quite liked it. It is based on a YA novel that I have not read that basically retells Hamlet from the point of view of Ophelia, you know, Hamlet's girlfriend, who is, you know, in the original Shakespeare, something of a victim, you know, of circumstance and of larger forces. And this story attempts to sort of reframe the tale as we know it through her point of view, to give her agency, to present things that happen in Hamlet from a whole other point of view,
right?
To sort of maybe like give them another explanation, another way that things might have gone. So it's kind of like a teen girl Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead in a way. You know, like we know the original so well, it's so iconic in Western literature that, you know, this movie just kind of like operates in the nooks and crannies of Hamlet, and, you know, tells a few other stories that aren't in Hamlet at all.
Right.
But Daisy Ridley plays Ophelia. Naomi Watts is Gertrude. Clive Owen is Claudius. Tom Felton is Hamlet. And I really enjoyed this film. It just kind of caught me by surprise because it is lush in the sort of like grand, you know, like the recently departed Franco Zeffirelli style of Shakespeare adaptation. But it kind of, you know, it sort of takes this literary warhorse and kind of knocks it on its ear a bit and be like, well, what if this is what actually happened at this moment where we've come to understand that this is what it's supposed to mean? Like, for example, in this one, when Hamlet tells Ophelia to go to a nunnery, which in the original is this like horrible insult, and it's what, you know, causes her to, I think that's the tipping point where she commits suicide. It's kind of a code in this one, and he's actually telling her to hide out in this place, you know. And so, like, you know, there's kind of like, you know, he's almost like winking at her when he says it, like, right, get to a nunnery kind of thing, you know. So just stuff like that. And I don't know, I was charmed by it. I thought it was smart, and
is charmed the right word based on Ophelia's fate?
Well, Ophelia's fate in Hamlet isn't necessarily Ophelia's fate in Ophelia. Maybe check it out.
Well, then maybe I will.
Okay.
Before the end of the year.
Yes.
Yeah. When there's, you know, a stack of screeners that demand my time and attention.
Right.
So moving down the road, I would stick, because I've seen both of them, I would put Crawl and Child's Play on roughly the same level.
Okay. I didn't see Child's Play, but I did see Crawl.
I did finally get out to a theater to see Child's Play.
Okay.
And I had a great time.
Oh, okay.
I know it did not get a lot of, you know, positive attention.
Yeah.
But I like what they did with it. In this version,
Chucky is basically Alexa with legs now, right? Is that the deal?
Yeah. Chucky is a doll that is also basically Alexa. And the reason this particular Chucky is homicidal is because an ill-treated employee in the Chinese factory that makes Chucky. They call it the My Buddy doll, which I guess was the same.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, in the original. This employee has been is being abused at on the job, and before before being fired, like he's fired and then told he has to finish the day, so he sabotages the doll.
Does he click on the evil setting?
Or? Yeah, he clicks on the take off all filters, take off all.
Protocols.
Any kind of behavioral things that they've programmed into it, take them off.
Hmm.
So this is a Chucky that doesn't have any real agency over his own evil. He's been, you know, I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. Like it's
his moral compass has been removed.
He's created that way by an employee that has been treated terribly.
Hmm.
Which is a perfect, you know, storyline to talk about during this Amazon strike. Watch out how you treat your employees. They will sabotage your product, perhaps. So, discount damaged Chucky winds up in the home of Aubrey Plaza. She's a single mother.
Does
and
she,
her kid.
Is she Aubrey Plaza-ing at all in this movie?
Oh, she's fully Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, okay.
Which is, come on, when is that a bad thing?
Oh, it's not. I just couldn't figure out how this role in this movie would account for Aubrey Plaza. It didn't seem like a good fit. Somehow.
When I go see a movie with Aubrey Plaza, I want Aubrey Plaza.
Absolutely.
And that's what Chuck. That's what this one gives you.
Okay.
She's a single mother who's trying. But who is also Aubrey Plaza.
Gotcha.
And, you know, all the terrible people that are in her life and the kid's life, they get theirs. And each, you know, death is enjoyable. There's no real moral to it. There's a great chaotic ending in the discount store where Aubrey Plaza works,
Walmart, or
a little bit like a Walmart, like a dollar store kind of Walmart.
Okay,
and
like a Big Lots,
a little bit like that, yeah.
Okay,
and the ending reminded me a little bit of the prom scene of Carrie, which is you know,
okay.
If you're gonna mimic something,
sure,
why not that?
Go for the best.
it's not a good movie.
But was it satisfying?
But it was totally satisfying.
Okay.
I had a very enjoyable time watching this doll slaughter people.
What?
I am not scared of dolls that do these things. And what I like about this film is that it isn't trying to turn it into a horror film.
Hmm.
Like, let's put Chucky against Annabelle, for example. Annabelle Creation thinks she's got some spooky ghosts in her that can make things happen. Chucky's just going to chop her head off.
That's a crossover I eagerly...
they need to fight. they need to fight. And I would be very happy if they did.
What is your investment in the Child's Play series up until now?
I think they're fun. I think they're fine.
Like, how many of the OGs did you see?
I saw Bride of Chucky.
Okay.
Seed,
Cult.
I can't remember. I think I saw Seed of Chucky. They're all stupid, but I enjoy them.
Because I've only seen the OG Child's Play. I saw it once when it came out in 1988, and
right.
I watched it again in the last year because that was our Max Fun bonus content episode of Who Shot Ya.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that people were saying about this one was it's the first one that Don Mancini had nothing to do with.
Okay.
Like, he's the guy who sort of created the series and then directed a lot of the later ones, and he's off now doing, like, some Child's Play TV series for sci-fi,
right.
But that this movie was basically like kind of, you know, the owners of the franchise yanked it out of his hands. So
right.
I have no dog in that hunt, but I know for a lot of people who are fans of the franchise and fans of Mancini, they thought that was kind of crappy.
Did he want to be a part of it?
I don't know that he was offered the opportunity either
way.
I see.
Crawl? Should I? Is that important? Do I care? I don't know.
Fair enough.
Crawl.
Crawl.
Crawl. That they did not show to the press.
No.
Which usually means the barf of puke.
Yes. They showed it to a handful of junket people, including our friend William Bibbiani.
Yeah.
Who immediately went on Twitter and was like, this movie's really good. Why aren't you showing it to critics?
Right.
It is satisfactory at being the thing that it's supposed to be.
It does what it says on the box.
Yes.
Who said that to you?
That's what Matt Atchison's line.
It does what it says on the box. It's Category 5 hurricane has hit Florida. And no, they don't talk about climate change because it's a Category 5 hurricane hitting Florida. I mean, that happened anyway.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure climate change is going to make more of them happen.
Indeed.
Now. A competitive swimmer played by
Caius Scodelario.
Unwisely. Does not evacuate. She runs back into town to try to save her missing father. She can't find him. She goes to their old house and discovers him passed out under the house in the crawl space underneath.
Well, it's a full basement, but as the water rises, it becomes more of a crawl space.
Okay, sure. And the water starts coming in. And that's when she figures out, oh, there's like two alligators in here swimming around trying to eat us. So they're both sort of barricaded into certain sections of the...
Yeah, like they can be behind some pipes and the gators can't get at them. But here comes that hurricane and the water rising, right?
And
water
levels
are rising.
And the pipes and the gators are between them and the stairs to get out of the place.
Right.
Also, the levee is fixing to break.
Yes. Ever since you pointed out that Caius Scodelario in the trailer looks a lot like Emma Stone,
I thought it was. I can't
unsee it.
In my trailer bubble, where I try not to see them, I did unfortunately catch a glimpse of one scene in a trailer for this film. Why I opened my eyes, I don't know, but there she was. And I thought, as I opened my eyes and closed them very quickly, I thought, oh, Emma Stone's in the alligator movie. And then I didn't think about it ever again. Like, I just thought, oh, Emma Stone's in the alligator movie. Yeah. And then about 3 days before we saw it, I thought, I sure haven't seen Emma Stone doing any press for this. I wonder why. It must be bad. And then I realized, no, that was not Emma Stone at all. It's a different person.
We live in an era in which, you know, it would not be...
It's budget Emma Stone.
I suppose. But it would not be implausible that Academy Award winner Emma Stone is starring in the killer alligator.
It never crossed my mind that she wouldn't.
Yeah. No, yeah. It totally scans.
Yeah.
They did not get Emma Stone. They got Caius Scodelario. She's fine.
I think she's a little more than fine. I think she really commits to this movie.
No, she's good. Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
She has to live up. The bar now has been set.
Yeah.
Blake Lively in The Shallows.
Like, Lively is so good in The Shallows.
That is a performance, ladies and gentlemen. And I will even say Mandy Moore in 47 Meters Down.
Okay, don't get crazy. She's fine.
She's fine.
Yeah.
Next to those two, this is less, but still good.
Yeah.
She's still committed and resourceful, and she's in it to win it. And Barry Pepper is her dad, which makes me feel super old, because I remember when Barry Pepper was like one of the young guys in like Saving Private Ryan.
And Battlefield
Earth. Well, of course, Johnny Goodboy Tyler. No, I thought about that too, but...
So then the alligators chase them, and then the alligators eat a whole bunch of other people who are in the vicinity. There's more than two. There's more than 10. There's a lot of them. They're just all just... swarming. Well, they especially want to eat Barry Pepper and Caius Cotelario. So, you know, all sorts of, you know, obstacles and setbacks and dangerous things. And
would-be rescuers.
Yeah, all that stuff happens. It's short. It's like 85 minutes.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun.
I mean, it is directed by Alexandre Aja, who, you know, prompts mixed responses among horror aficionados.
Right.
This is no Piranha 3D, heaven knows.
But what is?
Exactly. That, I think, is still his apex of apex Predator movies.
Yes.
But I had a great time. I was very entertained. I you know, if I'd had popcorn in my hand, I would have thrown it in the air.
Oh, my goodness.
At particular moments of the film.
I say this every time we go to a film like this, but there are few pleasures in life greater than sitting next to you in a film like this, because you are fully engaged. You are squealing, you are jumping, you are squirming, you got your... You're shaking your hands in front of your face. You're like, you're into it. And it's a delight to watch.
I'm not a horror guy. I'm a soft touch
I love that about you when we're in the theater together and I'm right next to you. Wow. It's a treat. It is as fun as whatever the film is.
I'm so glad you're entertained.
I'm very entertained. Keep it up. It's good work. So yeah, Crawl, why not treat yourself to alligators eating people?
Yeah. It's what cinema is all about.
And next month is the sequel to 47 Meters Down.
Yes.
I don't know what it's called, but...
It's not called 48 Meters Down.
It should be.
Come on.
It's one more
meter.
It's called 47 Meters Down, more sharks or something. I'm not sure.
The Downing.
Yeah. And then, what's the last one?
Stuber.
We're already there.
47 Meters Down, Uncaged. Because Nicolas Cage is not in this movie.
Okay. Kumail Nanjiani is an Uber driver named Stu. I'm not making that up.
You couldn't be.
Dave Bautista is a alpha dog cop on the trail of bad guys. He has also just had LASIK surgery. So he's bumping into things. It's wacky. He's also the kind of guy who's like, I don't use apps and I don't know things. And what's the Uber? And he jumps in the Uber and he's like, take me to Compton. And Kumail Nanjiani's like, that's not how it works.
Men don't cry, bro.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. And he kidnaps Kumail Nanjiani and makes him go all around town. It's Collateral, only it's the cop. The cop kidnapping the driver.
I had
to
not
make
made
the crime
connection.
Not happen. And there are a lot of jokes in the film.
Almost none of which
are funny.
And
almost a third of which are about Stu's insistence on getting a 5-star review.
Mm.
They take that one joke and
beat it into the ground.
Yeah, so often. And I laughed when they talked about when Kumail Nanjiani says to Dave Bautista, am I taking you to see a variety of Sarah Connors today? Like, and I laughed again when they got into a big knockdown, drag-out fight. And the point of the fight was, it's okay for men to show their emotions. Because that is one of the ongoing themes in the film, that Dave Bautista's character is, you know, the hero of the movie.
Yes.
But he's as toxic as Samuel Jackson is in the most recent Shaft, and still, and also making like masculinity jokes about Kumail Nanjiani, jokes about him having an electric car, you know?
Because how dare he?
Yeah, men don't drive cars like that. It's so tedious and
you know, and his
poorly written,
his jerkiness has affected his relationship with his daughter Natalie Morales, who is an artist? Question mark.
She's one of those artists that has like an open, like you go to her opening in the film, and you get to see the art at her opening, and no two things look like they were made by the same person.
Like it was somebody took a group show and just put her name on it. It was like, okay, we can film here.
I was like, what's going on in this gallery? Like, how is she capable of, is she Zelig? Like, how is she capable of, like, blending in with all these different styles?
And, of course, the most famous...
Some of it is sculpture, some of it's painting, like, it's whatever it is.
The most famous person in the movie who seems completely extraneous to the plot is, of course, your secret villain. That's all I'll say.
Oh, we're not going to talk about how this poor actress deserves so much better.
Fine, yes.
Than the career cards she's been dealt.
Mira Sorvino is not treated... Neither she nor Iko Uwais from The Raid.
Oh, my God. Thank you for bringing him up, too. There are two set pieces that are fight scenes with him. And you're thinking, all right, good. The dude from The Raid is going to fight. And the dude from The Raid does fight. And during that fight... Instead of allowing him to fight, they shake the camera all around.
Well, what was
so that you cannot see the fighting?
What was the cruddy movie that he's in with Mark Wahlberg? The one where Mark Wahlberg actually says, "Say hello to your mother for me."
I don't remember.
You remember that one?
I do, but I don't remember.
Well, anyway, he's in that, and I remember reviewing that movie and saying, like, his fight scenes are edited so much that Betty White could have played the role.
This isn't even an editing situation. It is literally someone taking the camera and shaking it.
Mm.
So that you are in no way understanding what's happening during the fight.
But, you know,
I'm like, why did you bring the guy from The Raid to this movie if you're not going to point the camera and just let him do his thing?
Yeah. Ugh. And then Mira Sorvino, Academy Award winner Mira Sorvino.
Yes.
She's already been in a Hallmark movie. Like, you know, this woman has suffered, you know, and we found out.
Apparently not enough.
Well, we find out, you know, that, you know, she was one of the people who Harvey Weinstein tried to destroy and all this stuff. And so what does she get now? The crappy, useless cop who turns out to be the bad guy of Stuber.
Sorry we spoiled it, but I'm not actually sorry at all.
Stuber spoiled itself.
It's crap.
Ugh.
I really...
It was one of those movies where when you and I just sort of look at each other during a movie, like, oh, we can't leave because we're reviewing this. I want to leave. I would leave.
Get up and leave. Yeah.
But I'm reviewing this and I cannot.
This film can't even get its weather continuity right. It's set in Los Angeles and they begin the movie making a big deal about what a heat wave is happening.
Yeah.
The radio guy even says it's 103 and it's 107 in the valley.
It's a scorcher.
And then the sun goes down and suddenly everyone's putting on their coats.
And then it rains.
Bundling up. And then it rains. It pours rain.
And it's like Chekhov's heat wave. They mention it all these times in the first few minutes.
And then it disappears.
That's going to matter somehow? Nope, it will not.
They even wet everyone down
in
the first third of the film because everyone is so... miserably hot and sweaty.
Yeah.
And then it just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
The movie, the day turns to night and everyone gets cold.
And then the cold front
suddenly
comes
through. Yeah, it's Christmas. It's insane. It is absolutely inept. And the director of this guy who made Goon.
Yes.
A film we love.
Yeah, and What If, which I liked quite a bit. I'm shocked.
Well, I have a theory about these things. I think
studio notes,
not just notes. I think that what happens with guys like this, filmmakers like this, is you get a movie that you make a film that everyone loves, some scrappy little low budget Canadian movie.
Right. And then you get your big Hollywood chance, and then they Andrea Arnold you.
Yeah. They come to you and say, hey, what do you want to do? Well, here's a project for you. You want to do this?
Yeah.
And you say, oh, yeah, I want to do that. I want to make a movie with cool Dave Bautista and hot, hot, hot Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah.
You know, because his career is on the upswing.
Yeah.
He directed The Big Sick. He wrote it.
No, he co-wrote it.
He wrote it. Okay, sure, he wrote it. I don't know. He didn't direct it. Anyway. You think, oh, this guy's going places. I want to get in on that action. And then you get there, and the people above you in charge say, okay, more of this, less of this, eliminate that. We're going to go in a completely different direction. And every day they grind you down and grind you down and grind you down and take the film away from you entirely, and you have no say in the matter because you got no juice. You're not powerful enough yet. All you did was make a little Canadian movie that people liked. Now his name's on it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to blame him.
No, but it's a
tragedy. Something went wrong, and I don't think it was his fault.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah. Well, is it a tragedy?
Well, the movie...
Are we using the word tragedy?
Okay, maybe it's not a tragedy, but it's...
Properly.
You know, this movie seems to just have had everything stacked against it. You know, it was a Fox movie that is now a Disney movie. Like, you know, it's just sort of... It's doomed to be a historical footnote, and it's terrible. So don't waste your time. We have letters.
Do you have a DVD pick of the week?
Well, I figured since we're honoring the Amazon strike, and I usually link to Amazon when we talk about, you know, our picks, that we would eschew that this week. I'll say this. My streaming pick is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is now on Netflix. We just watched it last night as a club meeting with our Patreon members.
Yes.
If you want to become
I had to bail early, and I apologize to all of you who were, you know, hoping to have a full 2 hours with you last night.
Go to Patreon.
But I had a very important rock and roll music concert to attend last night, and it was, I had to leave at 7:30, and the movie didn't finish until 7:55, and I had to bail.
If you want to go to patreon.com/linoleumknife to learn about our monthly club meetings and all the other cool things that we offer, like additional shows and, you know, items. Check that out. Anyway, so last night for our monthly club meeting, we watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse on Netflix, and I realized, wow, this is a movie that you really do need to watch multiple times because there's so much going on. Yeah. Like, at some point, if I have an afternoon, I think I need to just sort of, like, ride the pause button and, like, look at all the sort of background gags and billboards and back covers of comic books and things and all these jokes that I'm sure I'm missing because I was just already catching little things here and there. It was like, oh, that's a thing and that's a thing and that's a thing. I'm sure you probably saw it, but if you haven't, see it. And if you have seen it, see it again. You'll find stuff you didn't see before.
You should also watch the 1980 film Alligator.
Can people watch the 1980 film
it's
Alligator?
It's trash. It is about a baby alligator that gets flushed down a toilet, eats laboratory rats with growth hormones.
Ah, as you do.
Alligator gets real big, gets out of the sewers, goes on an eating mission.
And only Robert Forster can save us.
Yes. John Sayles wrote the screenplay.
Yes.
Here's the thing. It is available on DVD. Kinda. I went looking for it. And I found a copy. And everything seemed normal. And no one told me any differently when I bought it. It was like $3, $4. I thought, okay, great. It's probably not in print, but I can still get a DVD of this for like $4. The DVD shows up in the mail. It's a Korean bootleg.
Yeah, you basically bought that movie off a blanket.
Yeah, I didn't know that they didn't tell me this when I clicked buy. Mm-hmm. It just said, ships from the United States. It looked like a real DVD. I opened it up. I opened the box. It is a Korean bootleg. However, the transfer is impeccable. And so, live and learn. Sometimes you accidentally are buying a bootleg from some other country.
Saw we.
So if you can find an old VHS,
there you go.
Knock yourself out. We got letters. We got one letter and one review. This is from Andrew. In an attempt to not be upset on Twitter all of the time, a group of my friends are working on setting up a movie book club in which we watch one movie a month and then meet up to discuss it. I would like to discuss a good mix of artsy classic films and modern films as well, so that the discussions don't get stale and everyone feels like they have their taste considered. As you are both film critics and know other film critics, you have spent some time discussing films with others outside of the podcast, I was wondering if you had any recommendations, either for films or a good format to do this. Between everyone who said they're interested in the group, we have access to all major streaming services.
Okay.
And a few niche ones like Criterion and Canopy.
Nice.
So I'm not too worried about the films lacking accessibility. This email is getting very long. I'll wrap it up now. But what do you think is a good first category to start with? The group is fairly eclectic, so I wasn't sure if diving into the deep end or finding an interesting middle ground would be the idea. Thank you. Drew, a.k.a. Lord Bobenheimer. Or is it Bobenheimer?
I think it's Bobenheimer.
Okay. Alonzo actually got the pronunciation right when you read the review I left, which is something that has never happened.
Wow. I mean, you know, I'd say probably, you know, you might all take turns picking a movie. That's usually in a book club scenario that seems to go well.
Because then you're getting to sort of like make a case for your taste.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. You know, and then that way that person can sort of start the discussion with, well, here's why I picked this one. And here's why this movie means something to me.
Right.
And then you go into the discussion. We had an aborted effort called Fancy Movie Nights.
Well, for Alonzo's 40th birthday, a bunch of his friends chipped in and got him the Janus box set.
Yes, has the big 50th anniversary box.
I don't know how many movies in it, but it's like a lot of discs, all classic art house films.
Right.
From the 40s through now.
Well, it was 50s. It was mostly like 40s, 50s, 60s.
Okay.
And we actually, the idea was to go through it monthly alphabetically, but I think the first one was like Andrei Rublev or something. So the first time out we cheated and we started with The Importance of Being Earnest, because who doesn't like, you know, the Anthony Asquith, The Importance of Being Earnest,
right,
from the 50s, I guess.
Maybe, yeah.
And so that was fun. And then, you know, after like Andrei Rublev and Ashes and Diamonds and some other ones, like
sometimes these films are challenging.
Yes. Some months no one came.
Sometimes you've got to put a little effort in.
Yeah. You know, so talking,
that's cinema.
Talking people into coming over for like Fists in the Pocket or Ivan the Terrible Part 1.
God. Fists in the Pocket is amazing.
It is, but it was a hard sell for the group. Anyway, ultimately, we just gave up.
Y'all at your movie book club, watch Fists in the Pocket.
Yes, you should.
Do it.
We kind of wound up giving up on it. But I think if everybody can take turns picking one, then they feel invested and they feel like... And then also, you don't always have to be the one that starts the discussion. Whoever whoever chose the movie that time or that month, you know, they can kind of kick off the discussion and get things rolling. Good luck. I hope it works.
Yeah. It should be fun.
Yeah.
Here's a 5-star review.
Ooh.
Matt Bullions says...
He likes soup.
Many of the films discussed here are in a very limited release. Oh, sorry. Many of the films discussed here are in very limited releases and take their good old time making their way to the rest of the country. But I've had several films recommended on this podcast that I have later found and been blown away by.
Oh.
By the way, the headline for this, the subject line for this review is insightful.
Ooh.
We are insights true. David Alonzo's banter is very entertaining, and the listener wishes they could be their friend, even when they occasionally trash a really good movie. I still don't understand why they insist on making this a profanity-free podcast. But oh well, keep on doing what you're doing, guys.
Thank you, Matt.
Every once in a while, we explain ourselves regarding the clean podcast designation on Apple Podcasts. We took it initially. We decided we had the choice, clean or explicit. Mm-hmm. You sign up that way when you make your podcast. Are you going to be a clean podcast or are you going to be an explicit podcast? And explicit doesn't mean that you're talking about, like, you know, boning all the time. You're talking, just if you want to say the F swear, you can. But I had this idea that because we are already cuss buckets in our non-microphone lives.
In the quotidian.
I thought it would be an interesting challenge. Could we stop swearing for 90 minutes a week or an hour or however long it takes to record the show? And the answer was yes.
Turns
out we can.
And if we don't, I go back and delete it.
And here are two reasons why we've kept it up that way. We have listeners who listen to this show in their car with their little kids. And they are happy that we're not constantly swearing. We do have a podcast. It's the top level of our Patreon subscription called Linoleum Nights, where we use any kind of language we choose. And I've heard from some listeners who subscribed at that level who said, oh, it was jarring to hear you swear. And I don't know that I like it. And when I heard that, I just said, well, F you, man. No, it's not awesome. Yeah, so, you know, it was a personal challenge to ourselves that just stuck.
Yeah.
And now we're happy to keep doing it that way. I think it's really funny, though. Anytime we have a guest, we wind up having to bleep them.
True.
Because
most
podcasts are full of profanity, and most people are full of profanity, sure. It turns out.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. That's it. That is the end.
That is.
We're done. We're through.
Oh, you know
this
what?
Is a quick,
episode. No. One more thing.
What?
R.I.P. Denise Nickerson.
Yes.
Our beloved Violet Beauregard.
Yes.
Passed away this week. She had a massive stroke a year ago and was this week taken off of life support. She was 62 years old, best known for playing Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but she also was a member of the band The Short Circus on PBS's The Electric Company in the 1970s.
Really, not only they played their instruments, but they really sang.
They did really sing, yeah. And she was one of the pageant contestants in Michael Ritchie's brilliant 1970s satire, Smile.
Right.
And apparently, I was told by somebody on Facebook, she was in a musical version of Lolita that never quite made it to Broadway.
That blows my mind.
In the title role. And if you go to YouTube, you can find some of the tracks from that. But anyway, yeah, Denise Nickerson. She always seemed like she had a great sense of humor. And she brought me many joys over many projects.
Yeah.
And we miss her. And so just wanted to give her a shout out real quick. So that's our program. Thank you for listening. You can please check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney on their shows, Cancel Too Soon, and critically acclaimed over on the Schmoes No Network. And, of course, check out our friends, the Schmoes. Listen to Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, Deck the Hallmark, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts, and while you're there, be like Matt Bullions and leave us a 5-star review. We will read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Lounge.com and Spotify and Google Play and CastBox and Podbean and pretty much all the podcatchers. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. He lives at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. And you can drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. We look forward to meeting you again next week. But until then,
goodbye.